Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Our relationship with food is complicated, even more so than you might think. Take, for example, the fact that how close you sit to an all-you-can-eat buffet can change whether you go back for seconds or thirds. Or what about this, that the defeat of your favorite home sports team, such as the Red Sox loss to the Yankees last night, can actually affect what you're eating and how much you're eating the next day. Plus, this was the one that really gets me, just how fast we metabolize food can be altered by something as simple as a low-fat label on a milkshake. Well, Rachel Herz is a neuroscientist and a professor at Brown University and Boston College, and she studies how our psychology, neurology, and physiology shape and influence our eating habits. And she's written about it in a new book. It's called Why You Eat What You Eat, The Science Behind Our Relationship with Food, and she joins me now. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Meghna. It's great to be here.
So just how susceptible are we to all these, I don't know, are they invisible factors and forces in terms of how we eat and what we eat?
Well, actually, most of them are visible. And in fact,
or maybe unconscious, should I say?
Well, I think we're just not aware. And that's the whole thing. That the reason why I wrote this book is to make people realize all the influences that are going into their decisions with food and even their perceptions of the taste of the food, how much they eat, how fast they eat, and a whole variety of things. But they're all around us all the time. And it's just realizing what they are.
Okay, so can we start with the labeling one? Because you say that you write about how just changing a label. So yeah, like if you have two cups of the same kind of milkshake, that just changing the label on one and labeling it low fat versus decadent can actually change how the body metabolizes that milkshake. Tell me more about that.
So this was research by Alia Crum, who's now at Stanford University, and she showed that basically this is a massive placebo effect. And what's so fascinating about it is it goes far beyond the typical, you know, here's a sugar pill and you feel less pain, you're expecting to feel less pain and so forth. Here, people were not expecting to change their metabolism. You think you have no control over that. And yet, just by seeing a label that said decadent, 620 calories, indulgence you deserve, people's metabolism revved up. Their ghrelin levels, which is the hunger hormone, so it's high when you're hungry, drops when you're not hungry, plummeted. And by comparison, that exact same milkshake given to them, and it's labeled now 140 calories, sensible shake, zero added fat, zero sugar and so forth, their metabolism stayed totally flat, as did their ghrelin levels. And the actual calorie content of the milkshake was 340 calories, so not negligible. So this means that by seeing labels and by believing what we're eating is a decadent extravagance, our bodies actually change in accord with that. And that when we think we're having, you know, very low calorie, low fat, whatever it is, we stay flat.
I'm going to label everything decadent now just to rev up my metabolism. But but this is a placebo effect that's working because of some change, like some hormonal change, right? I mean, or some physiological change that's tied to the visual input of seeing the decadent label. Like what's going on in the body to make that happen?
Well, the presumption is that as a function of the fact that we have learned through our experience that when we see labels that say huge number of calories and fabulously luscious, that our bodies already go into sort of an expectation of metabolism. And so it seems that that's actually what's happening here, even though this went on for an hour that people's blood was being sampled and ghrelin levels were being observed. Nevertheless, the mind sort of co-opted the body in the sense that this was what was expected to be occurring and that is what happened, even though the actual content of the food was not in line with that.
So that makes me think that virtually every kind of food labeling we see is probably having an effect on whether or not we eat it and possibly how we even metabolize it.
Well, that's the implication. And this is what's so incredible about this is that just based on our past experiences and what we think about going into the eating endeavor, we're going to be changing not just our behavior with respect to it, but also how our body responds to it. And I think this is also the case, like when we think that something is healthy, for example, if you're told, here, have these healthy cookies or high fiber or whatever. First of all, we think that they have fewer calories, even though we've never been told anything about their calorie content, and we think that it's okay to eat more of them. So that's even a more direct example of how when we believe something is, you know, healthy or whatever the case might be, that our behavior changes and we actually don't feel as full. I mean, so we're really driven by all kinds of psychological influences above and beyond what our body is telling us.
Right. And so, the fact that it translates to physiological changes is what fascinates me the most, that we can even have different senses of how full we feel with the same exact same kind of food. It's fascinating. I mean, so food manufacturers and advertisers must know this, that we are very susceptible to the power of labeling. I mean, how do you have any tips on sort of how to fight back against these subtle manipulations?
Well, what's actually interesting is these really decadent labels make people eat less. So manufacturers probably want to err on the side of the whole, like, sort of low-fat, low-calorie sort of messaging is actually what's, I think, driving sales more than telling people this is super high-calorie and decadent, because we actually, not only does our body metabolism change in response to believing something's really high-calorie, we also feel more full. We think it's okay to eat less. So you're less likely to completely devour the tub of ice cream if you think it's got a gazillion calories than you think if you think it's really low calorie. So if manufacturers want you to buy more of their product, they're going to be giving you clues to, oh, this is healthy or this is low calorie or it's sensible, because then you're going back to buy more.
resist. Okay. So since we're talking about purchasing habits, you do write in the book about I don't know if it's a sad irony or what, around what you describe as purchasing habits of people who shop at places like Whole Foods. So tell me about that.
Well, so there's an interesting effect that happens when people shop in places where specifically the products in the store are touting virtuous concepts like organic and purity, and the labels of the food have virtue and wholesomeness. And those concepts actually make us feel morally superior in and of themselves. So when we reach for the honest tea, we think that we're actually better than we would be if we were reaching for a Lipton's, you know, delicious tea or whatever the case might be. So when people buy products that have those kind of labels, they get into a certain kind of a mindset that makes them feel more morally superior. And actually, as a function of that, they behave less morally good towards other people. So they're worse towards other people as a function of the fact that they have felt that they've already done something morally superior. So it's almost like you'd expect potentially would work in the opposite way. Like, I feel I've been morally good, so I'm a good person, I'm going to be extra nice. But actually people feel like they've used up their goodness and they don't have to now share it with other people.
But how is this measured? I mean, how do you know this?
So this is research that's been done in the laboratory for the most part. So this isn't actually taking people in Whole Foods per se. but this is people who are given sort of different kinds of shopping experiences. For example, there was one study done at the University of Toronto where people shopped in an online store that either had products like Honest Tea and Back to Nature, this and that, or a conventional store that they had all the same examples of foods, but they were, you know, regular potato chips or, you know, mac and cheese and so on. And what was then studied was how people behaved later after the shopping experience with another supposed participant in an online game. And they were much more nefarious. They were more likely to cheat. They were also more likely to steal money from an envelope where they could self-pay for having played the game if they had shopped in the online virtual organic store.
So this has been shown in a controlled experimental environment, because I was wondering, that answers my question, because I was about to ask you, like, whether or not, if we're getting sort of causations confused here, because I'd wondered if folks who can afford to regularly shop at these higher priced, quote unquote, more virtuous places because of their relative increased affluence, if that might sort of engender those less positive. I hope I'm not alienating too many listeners right now, but that might be one of the reasons why you see some more selfish attitudes elsewhere. But you're saying that it may have nothing to do with that because it's been shown in a controlled environment.
That's right. So these are college students. So they may be somewhat
These are
entitled.
College students. All right. Maybe they're just selfish to begin
with. Exactly.
Okay. Oh, wow. So this is so fascinating to me. Now, what about this idea, because I know this is a big deal here in the greater Boston area, about bringing your own bags to the grocery store? How might that change us?
So this is also really interesting work about how the external environment influences how we behave. And in this case, bringing your own grocery store bag to the grocery store changes behavior in two ways. One, not surprisingly, people tend to buy more organic over conventional produce because bringing your own bag is environmentally ethical, and therefore you're already kind of primed in this sort of environmentally conscientious way. But the second thing that's really interesting and also surprised me when I read about this research is that people are more likely to put a treat into the shopping cart, aka for them, when they bring their own bag as opposed to relying on the store to provide it. Now, this is because of what seems to be an effect called licensing. So that is to say that you are feeling licensed to give yourself a treat because you've just done something good. And it sort of works in the opposite way to the sort of organic and the whole foods kind of concept. But here, you feel like you've done something good for the environment. Now it's okay to give yourself a pat on the back for doing that good thing. And in a grocery store, the pat on the back comes with the box of chocolates that you might not have otherwise gotten. Now, the key, though, is the store has to not punish you for not bringing your own bag. So that is to say, there can't be a penalty.
Oh, they can't make you pay for the
exactly.
For the bag. I see.
You have to feel like you're being virtuous of your own free will.
Oh, my God. So human beings really like to congratulate themselves. I mean, that's one of the things I'm hearing and how that might affect our relationship with food.
Well, the other really fascinating thing is that this is also something that's seen even in a more banal setting of like watching people where they go in the grocery store. So radio frequency tags were put on people's grocery carts and so they could tell where they were in the geography of the store. And after people had been in the produce section and buying grapefruit and kale, the next place in the store they were most likely to go was one of the vice departments, either alcohol or ice cream. So we're totally in this balancing act of virtue with vices all the time, even though we may not realize
it. You just described my shopping cart. I'm not joking. Oh, my goodness. Okay. All right. But so, I mean, the book goes over a lot. I mean, we just touched on some of the things regarding sort of how both environmental how environmental inputs can really change what we do and our choices we make around food. But it seems like your message is like knowing this is half the battle, that knowledge is power. So I'm just curious about what you really want people to understand most about our relationship with what we eat.
Well, I want them to understand all the different sensory factors. So there's a lot of them that are just really about our senses. So, for instance, what we're looking at, how the food is arranged, what we're listening to. If it could be music, for instance, it could be just plain old noise. And then all the psychological factors, because I feel that when we have this knowledge, we then get the control back over our relationship with food rather than feeling that food is controlling us. And I mean, I love to eat. I love food. And I want other people to have a happy, healthy relationship with food and therefore with this information to be able to sort of kind of figure out a little bit, hey, am I doing this right now because I really want to eat that cookie? Or is it because other things around me might be influencing me at this time? And then I can maybe take a step back for a second and just think about how much pleasure I'm getting out of it or not.
Yeah, but so I'm curious, like, how are we supposed to know what our genuine wants and desires are now, though? If, you know, because at some point in time, like we can't be completely shut off from our environment. And I suppose some people know internally what they really want and desire. But maybe some of those little nudges and triggers are actually okay.
Oh, absolutely. I totally think they're okay. It's just if we can sort of reflect for a couple of seconds and figure out, okay, I do really want this cookie. That's great. Have the cookie. But and for whatever reasons that may be, even if it just because it really looks enticing and you know that it's visually appealing and that's driving you to have it. But as long as we take those couple of seconds just to think, I think that will give us a sense of relation to our food that we're more in power and we're more in control. And then we may feel better about what we're doing.
Well, Rachel Herz is a neuroscientist and professor at Brown University in Boston College. Her new book is Why You Eat What You Eat, The Science Behind Our Relationship with Food. And she'll be reading at the An Unlikely Story bookstore in Plainville tonight. I have that right? We've got more information about that at radioboston.org. Rachel Herz, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Meghna. It's been a delight.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.